Namaste and welcome. It's nice to see everyone here on the Easter Sunday. We got beeping already. That's okay. Are you on call today? Yeah, sometimes she gets emergency things and has to go. So if we want to turn that down a bit, or you just turn it down, I think it's fine. We can use it for background, no problem. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So we'll just start off with the questions. I'll take one of these because... Can you talk about the role of animals in our lives? Why it is okay to kill and eat them? Everything has a life expectancy. Okay. It's a wonderful theory about everyone being vegetarian. And that's fine. If you want to be a vegetarian, be a vegetarian. You know, if it helps you feel more compassionate or whatever, go for it. Enjoy it. Okay? But if everyone on the earth is a vegetarian, there's only so much land that produces so much. And the population, it's like, why do you have the animals spayed? Why do you have them neutered? Kind of the same thing, because this overpopulation happens. It's part of nature. You know, part of nature is that all the animals are also, they're not vegetarian. So this is a big stickler with some people. They have the idea that if you are, you know, if you're truly spiritual, you're not going to eat meat. Okay. A lot of times on the path of Kundalini, you'll find if the energy is really, really going strong and you're way out of balance, and if you're only eating vegetarian food, what can happen is you become extremely spacey. Almost you can't function. It's too much for the body at some points in time. I've had friends long time ago. They were appalled because at parts of the journey I was eating meat, and so they were just offended. I saw them a few years later and they confided, I had to start eating meat. Okay. In the end, there's no death, okay, and the animals are not as attached to form as humans are. You know, they pass out and okay, they're on the other side and they're happy, okay, fine. Yes, nobody wants to see anything suffer. And in the next round of evolution, then things will change. But as far as it stands now, meat eating is still pretty commonplace. It really doesn't have a lot to do with your spiritual journey if you eat meat or not. You don't, you're not necessarily more spiritual if you don't, or less spiritual if you do. Most Tibetans eat meat. The monks eat meat, okay? They're Buddhist, but they eat meat. You don't find any Tibetans living up in Tibet growing crops. It doesn't happen. They're not less spiritual because they're eating meat. Okay? It also used to be way back when that Hindus also ate meat. The one they looked to for right action would be Ram. Ram and Sita. Well, Ram and Sita, he left the throne. He went off into the woods, banished. And when he left, he took the bow and arrow. And they were eating meat. Okay. It also used to be that they would kill the cow and they would offer meat to their honored guests. But sometime throughout the century, somebody decided that vegetarianism showed more love and compassion, etc. And so you'll be a vegetarian. That's hasn't been forever in Hindu tradition. Even among some other, you know, some Hindu factions, they still eat meat, especially Kali devotees, they eat meat. So I think it really has to be an individual thing. Yes, we don't want to see anything suffer. This is what is so conflicting when you go to India. Here, everyone's vegetarian, and the animal, the cow, is supposed to be sacred and holy. But yet you see them throwing stones at the dogs. The cows live, they wander anywhere. They live off garbage. If a cow gets hit, they let it lay there and suffer. You can't put it out of its misery. They go now and people have things and they buy in plastic bags. They throw the plastic bag. The cow comes and eat it and lays there and suffers for 3-4 days in absolute agony, dying. Yet you can't be humane and have a veterinarian come and put them out of their misery. So which is more humane in the end? To let them lay there and suffer for days on end in agony, or to give them a shot and put them out of their misery, let them pass easily? And I think that somebody was going to ask about Easter, so we'll save some of the rest of this, which will, you know, as an explanation when we get to that as well. But there is no death. There is no death. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Can you pass the mic?
I pretty much have been Essene my whole life and adult life. And in the Essene Gospels of Peace, it talks a lot about diet. And it talks about the fact that if you eat anything that's dead, that it kills your body. And pretty much it's a pretty much raw diet and, you know, no meat. And I lived that way for about 15, 20 years and was really healthy. But now I find that, I mean, I agree with you. I'm healthy. Some of the most unhealthy people I know are vegetarians.
Absolutely.
And I find that I do much better with some chicken and fish. But still, you know, I have these teachings have existed for millennia. And, what, you know, I mean, this biogenic diet, which is sprouts within the first 5 days of life and fresh picked tree ripened organic fruit, is sort of what they say is what the body needs the most.
It would be if the earth weren't depleted the earth is really becoming depleted of the vitamins and minerals and things. And so what you get, I mean, even if it's organic, it's grown and all this stuff is wafting through, you know. A lot of pollution and stuff is out there. So, you know, things are changing. Things are changing. Yes, you should eat as healthy as you can, absolutely. But what's really healthy for one is not healthy for another. And you have to see where you're at on the scale of things. Like I said, you know, for some, and I understand this, and it's wonderful, you know, if you're trying to develop compassion, then you do go through a phase where you're doing the really the vegetarian and this, and you know, and that's fine. And if it's making you feel healthier, if you're just so bogged down and stuff, then for some, yes, vegetarian is excellent. It can also help to raise that energy. But if you are on energy overload and you feel like your whole body is short-circuiting and you have no grounding and you feel like you're going to spontaneously combust in any moment, trust me. Vegetarian is not the way you want to be going. You need to eat heavier protein. You can try with tofu. You can try with, you know, nuts. You can try with these. But quite often, as the case is, that's not going to be heavy enough of a protein to bring you back into balance. You use it like almost like a medication. If your energy is way out, then you take, and you can try first, you know, try eggs. If that's not heavy enough, then fish. If that's not heavy enough, then chicken. If that's not heavy enough, then you do a little red meat and try to bring that down to where you can function, and then you can once again come back into a more balanced.
Yeah, that pretty much way. Describes what I was like as a vegetarian.
Yeah, it can be, you know, too much overload for some people. Yeah. Does the me actually exist, or is it an illusion? As long as you have this attachment to body and form and mind, then there's the me. Okay. In the end, though, it's neither real or unreal. As this plane of existence. This is what happens when you go through the nirvikalpa, and in that moment there is no you, nor has there ever been a you, and the only thing that exists is this primal divine essence of is. There's no world there, there's no me. And all the identifications you had wrapped around that create this sense of a me ends in that moment. So for one that's gone through that nirvikalpa and rests in realization, there is no me. And they will say that in essence, in one way, it's an illusion. Okay? But it's also, you know, Shiv Shakti. I say rather we're like the yantra, that seat state of absolutes there, but the waves that come out produce what people see as a me, as a persona. Okay, depending on the patterns that are held in place around that seed essence.
In my meditation, it seems like it's helping me to know that there really isn't a me per se. And I'm starting to feel the bigger picture around that. And that the other person's me isn't really real either. And so the essence of them is God, and the essence of me is God, and the essence of you is God.
Right. The essence, that pure essence, has no coverings. It simply is. And it's always remains pure, no matter what coverings come or go along the way. Okay? But once again, what we consider as me is wrapped around this body form that comes in again, and then all the experiences encountered by that. This is why, you know, when talk about reincarnation, it's not a singular type of a personality that goes forward. You come in with tendencies. But how you relate to those tendencies, to what's coming up, the same patterns coming in, you might generate a whole different type of a personality. In one life, you could be very sweet and gentle. The next one, you could be, you know, something entirely different. Okay. So this kind of this question about is there a me or is there a not, it just depends on what you're locked into. Okay. Yeah, the further you go, the more that it becomes more vaporous, more... It's not as solid. Things become not as solid the further you go. And so that identification starts to fall away. Yes?
When you did go beyond mind and you say you look for yourself and you weren't there, you were talking about the personality that you had to do with your mind, right? But... to say that you don't exist, is that saying that your spirit doesn't have any identity whatsoever? It doesn't have to have identity.
The ultimate, which is absolute, has no identity. It's a misnomer to say it's self. When you think of self, you think of some kind of an identity, some kind of persona, some kind of mental something. That's why I call it, it's like the, you know, you see the Shiva Linga, it's like a, it looks like a seed. It's a seed state. It's pure, it's perfect as it is, but it's like intellect without knowledge. Like St. John of the Cross said, I've entered into the unknowing that's beyond all knowledge. It simply is. Okay. It's the foundation for everything that comes into existence. Yet, in another sense, even though it sustains everything, and makes everything possible, it always, in one sense, separate from it. Has no cognition of this. Okay? Because it's not a persona. It makes its infinite potential impossibility. And when you have a form... okay, it's like the form is like the computer, okay? You're programming this computer, programming this vehicle, okay? You're not the vehicle, you're not the program, you are that which makes it all possible, okay? So we're a lot vaster than we think, and we have so much, there is so much infinite potential there in place. But we're limited by our own ideas and minds and confinements that have come within this journey attached to the vehicle you're in at the moment. Okay? We start collecting defining boxes and characteristics from birth. And this is what the spiritual path is here to do, to help you break through those boxes, to see really what's behind it all. I hope that answered that. Good. If this world is only an illusion, does it matter what we do with our lives and how we treat others? Is it illusion to you or is it reality to you? Whose question is this? Okay. Yes, it matters. Okay. As long as you're in mind, in doership, then yes, it matters. Okay. Doesn't mean that once, you know, you attain and go through and you're beyond that mind, that it doesn't matter. But at that point, you enter into what's called the sattvic or that you do which is the highest for humanity. It just simply is. It's the flow that's there. Okay? But yeah, whatever you do, you create karma. It's like what God, you know, in the Bible, it says what God judges is the hearts and the minds. So yeah, it matters. And it doesn't mean judging like, you know, some guy up on a throne sitting there with a thing rocked to hit you over the head with it. It's just that these laws of karma are in place because of what the Absolute is. Okay? It's infinite purity. So yes, it holds those laws into place. It can't be anything other than that. Sin is when we become separate from it. Okay? There's no longer flow, there's stagnation. That's called sin. And when we sin, what happens? We suffer. We create suffering. Because the nature of this purity is that based of basically love, not attachment, not greed, not clinging, not needy type of love, but love, which gives of itself. It's simply the way it is. This is why when it starts moving, Shakti creates divisionary more and more and more. It gives of itself. Okay? So, yeah. It's important. It's important. As long as there's duality in place, then you'll see hierarchy, appearances of being higher, lower, whatever. Although really, in the end, there is no higher and lower. Everything comes from that same divine essence. One does not have more of the divine essence than another does. It's just that one is more covered over and the other is more clear. That's all. But they have the same amount of that divine essence. Okay. You don't get more, you don't collect more because you're better. Become better when you let go of the things that appear as imperfection. Okay. The perfect is always underneath of that. Okay. You can't lose it, really. It just gets covered over. So this is the journey of peeling away the layers until we get to what's in the center, which is always perfect. It's like if you take something, you know, and it's clear, and then you add one layer of colored material over it, and another layer, and another layer, and another layer, and another layer. What happens? Eventually you can't see that clarity. It's skewed by all these different colored things that we've wrapped around it until they become dark and murky. And we, if you look at it from the outside, you say, oh, it's just dark and murky. But when you get to the center, you find out the center is clear. It's always been clear. It remains that perfection. Okay. That's why we say namaste. The divine within me, the divine God essence within me recognizes that divine God essence within you. It's one. Okay. Can you go through a kundalini process without pain and trauma? And can you talk about kundalini? What kundalini does is it starts unlocking the cellular memory. It starts bringing up all these things that we've collected, all these fears to be looked at and to be walked through to find out that they're illusion, that they have no more hold on us than what we're allowing it to have. Okay. Everything comes from energy. This is quantum. Everything is energy. Okay. And wherever the mind is focused, that's where the energy is going. When you start on a spiritual path, this energy ignites. You start looking for it. Your intention is there. Sometimes it starts by other ways and means. But once it begins, you start feeling it going through the system, and things start to happen. You'll start seeing sometimes lights. You'll start hearing sounds. You'll start, like for myself, it was the first time when, after receiving Shaktipat, it was so heavy, it was like a gold bolt of lightning going through the body. And I was 3 days in a samadhi type state where you feel like you're a part of God and everything is connected. This is a lower samadhi state, but it can be quite overwhelming the first time it's experienced. And right after that, then I was seeing auras. I wasn't training, trying to find them. They were just there in your face. All of a sudden, you're looking around and there's, you know, here I am in a Christian order and I'm looking and the cross on the altar had a purple glow around it and the one on the wall has this gold glow around it and I'm going, okay. So that starts the journey. But then if you have any fears at all, anything that fear, and you're resisting it, it can be very intense. Okay. But there is a way to do the journey, and it can bring up things, but there's a way to help remain in balance. If you understand what the process of Kundalini is, that it is to root all of this stuff out. It's a cleansing. No cleansing is fun. Like if your body is cleansing, what happens? You get toxic stuff coming out of the system. It stinks. You know, you may have diarrhea. You may have all these things will happen. It's a cleansing. Kundalini is like the Roto-Rooter. Okay. Roto-Rooter is coming through. So, yeah, at times it can be intense. Once it starts going, there could be a lot of kriyas that happen. They're creating pathways. They're opening things, trying to connect things, trying to move through the system. Kundalini gives you, I think, a bit more of a chance to reach realization. It's not a guarantee, because you can get lost in mental stuff, get lost in too much phenomena. Because if your mind is latching on to anything with the phenomena, whatever the mind, understand it's quantum, whatever the mind is focused on, it's going to create more of the same. This is why it's important if you're having problem and you're feeling Kundalini go through the body, you're not focusing on the body. Because if you're focusing on the body, what happens? You're just putting more energy into that. Where the mind is focused, that's where it's going to go. So this is why when you're in the midst of Kundalini journey, you get mantras and you get certain practices like the balanced breath. You get practices to keep bringing you back to center so your mind is not chasing this and that, the other things that are coming up, because they're not the goal. Some people get lost in this because they think they want to awaken Kundalini, they want to get the siddhis or these, you know, psychic skills or whatever it is, healing abilities. These things come along the way. They can be traps, though. You can be chasing too much of the scenery rather than letting go of the scenery and keep going, neti, neti, not this, not this, not this, not this. Because anything that's motion, whatever you're seeing, whatever you're feeling, whatever you're hearing, whatever you're encountering is not it. Okay? You want to keep going until you go into that nirvikalpa, beyond mind. This is why they're called a Kundalini Siddha Master. A Siddha Master is not one that's collected all the siddhis there are to collect. A city master is one that's gone beyond the cities. They've dropped it. They're a what? They're nothing. Okay? A city master is one that's gone and rests within the absolute realization of that primal essence, and that frees you up. Once you reach that zero-point balance, the phenomena, for the most part, ends. What is there to chase any longer? What is there needed to be manufactured? Nothing. Then you enter Leela, the play of God. Life as it is beautiful. It's the fragrance, the garden of God. Okay. Before, it's illusion, it's suffering. Okay. The suffering is the illusion. The play of God is reality. So this is why we say the world is illusion. It's not that the world itself is illusion. It's the suffering because of the mental attachments to this and that, because we don't know and we're not centered in that zero-point balance or that knowing of what truly we are. Okay. So this is the importance of this path. Yes, it's hell. It can be hell. That's why the book I wrote is called Kundalini from Hell to Heaven, because I went through 30 years of hell. I'm not going to tell you it was easy. Intense suffering at some parts of it. There can be some parts of it that are intense suffering. You pray for death. I prayed for death many a times. Please just kill me. I can't take it. You know? But then you get to the end of it and you wouldn't trade it for anything. But during the journey, it was hell. Not only was I going through Kundalini, there was PTSD, there was severe depression, there was, I mean, just horrendous, horrendous. I could barely move. I was so, at points, feeling so dysfunctional. But a lot of, during my life, it, you know, that past life, it was all a lot of trauma. A lot of trauma in the life, so I had a lot of other stuff to blow out. The good news is, though, it does blow out and it doesn't come back. So once you hit that nirvikalpa, and that what emerges, the person that went into the nirvikalpa, Sharon, doesn't exist any longer. There is no relationship to that past life, that suffering persona that was the queen of the pity party. It ends. There's just not even a relationship. I can't even go back and really try to dredge up what it was like to be in that suffering persona that was there, that was so miserable with everything. So is it worth it? You bet. Is it fun going through it? Absolutely not. It's work. Okay. But this is why I spend so much of my time now dedicated. All my time is dedicated to this seva, for those that are willing to make this journey. Because it's only in making this journey that you find that inner peace, that inner core within yourself. And then you can start, you know, helping others to come forward out of their stuff, to find out that there really is no reason that we have to suffer. That who is it that's holding the suffering in place? It's that identification with me, the me story. So this is the path of being able to be in enough of a steady spot that you can watch the me story go by and then start to question it in its validity. Who and what am I? Am I this body? Am I mind? Am I emotion? What brings it into play and what holds it in place? This is what we find out. This is what we question. And when the knots to those are cut, the knots to suffering are gone. How do you not get really bogged down in the second chakra when the kundalini settles there? By starting to question it. This is why it's so important to do the self-inquiry and to start looking and just, you know, step back and witness what's coming up. Witness the patterns that come up, and then start to question, where did these patterns emerge from? What is the source of them? Then question the validity of it. Okay? How does it come into being? Usually it has to do with something way in our past. And we find out that it's something that belonged to someone else, that we accepted and adopted as truth. That's why I call it the illusions of truth. Because if we really look at it, it's not truth at all. If it's causing us suffering, then it's not truth. Then it's a shadow we've adopted and run our life around as being truth. Confront the shadow. Confront the old patterns. Can you talk about the role of doubt, as in doubting others? I want to release doubting others. The only thing that we can do is just surrender in the universe. We can't change others and what they're doing or what they're saying or what's happening with them. We can only go within our own self, our own beingness, and find that stable place. Okay. Some people will be telling the truth, some people won't be telling the truth. Okay. But each, whether they're telling the truth or not, they have to deal with their own issues and what's coming up or not coming up, as the case may be. Okay. I don't know if that helps at all. Can you be a little bit more?
Well, I was thinking about doubt because I was meditating, and sometimes I have some reproach for the spiritual beings because I felt they didn't help me enough, and so I heard this answer, well, you don't doubt yourself, so why does it matter if the spiritual beings doubted this or that about you? Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's true. I really don't doubt myself too much. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, okay, in my life, I've encountered people who doubted me on certain things and people who pretended that they doubted me for certain things, which is a different story, you know, just to cause trouble. And then I thought, okay, well, how do I doubt people? So if I meet somebody and I'm working with them, I might have a shadow, a suspicion that they are not going to do it right or whatever it is. But then I realized, okay, their me doesn't exist and my me doesn't exist, so I don't need doubt. Mm-hmm. I can let go of doubt, and I don't have to doubt the divine beings.
Well, you don't doubt that divinity, what's there, but, you know, when we're dealing with personalities in the world, you know, Yeah, sometimes we can have like a precognition or something or a feeling that, you know, something is not going to play out quite the way, you know. So all you can do is, like I said, you can't, we can't make someone else different. All we can do is just be within ourselves the way that we need to be. That's all. But, yeah.
And I'm not really doubting their divine essence. I have to remember that mm-hmm. that I don't doubt.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't matter what someone's telling you or not. You know, you have to find it through your own experience as well. So, you know, some people, you know, they doubt me. I say, fine, doubt me. I don't care if you doubt me or, you know, if you think I'm full of shit, prove me wrong. I don't care. Go into meditation and find out. Find out for yourself. If you think I'm right, okay. Go into meditation and find out. If you think I'm wrong, same thing. I don't care. Okay, prove me wrong. Go into meditation, enter a nirvikalpa, and then come back. Okay? I don't care. Either way. Because it doesn't matter. It's like I said, you know, I can talk about absolute all day, but that and $2 will get you a cheap cup of coffee. You know, I mean, it's great for me, but, you know, for you, it's still theory. It's still hearsay. Okay. So the only way that it's liberating is to do the practice yourself. So all it takes is a few times of direct experience that you find out that your ideas about it versus really what's the reality of the experience of it are two vastly differing things. Okay? So we come here and we have satsang, and it just keeps to spur you on in your own search. Okay? To say it's possible. Okay? This is possible. Continue on, continue on, continue on. Yes, it's difficult. When the difficulties come up and we'll ask questions and we'll give you some, you know, some more feedback. But you really have to continue to do the meditation, to do the mantras, to stay in the present moment and not chase the mind here and there and let it take you off in another turmoil. To come to that moment where everything falls away and all that's left is that divine is. Okay, this is a process. It's a process. And each needs to make that journey alone. Yes, Guru's here for support. And if you hear what's right, it will resonate something within yourselves. It resonates within you because why? Because that inner perfection is already there. Okay? When it hears this and it knows that it's right, you'll feel something. There will be some feeling there. Okay? Because it's already present. You can't make something resonate within that's not already there. Okay? It has to be there in the first place to be able to resonate. And to understand, yeah, that is right. Okay, yeah, I feel that. I don't have it actualized yet, but yeah. I know that to be true. Okay, well now, let's get to the meditation. Let's get to the practice. Let's get to the point of finding that. And so it can come into actualization rather than theory, remaining theory. In philosophy. Okay. I don't want a lot of philosophers and theorists. I want to see more gurus. Satgurus. Not just gurus. Gurus can teach anything. They're, you know, anyone can be a guru. I want to see satgurus. Ones that are realized. Sages, okay? So then you can go forward and really help humanity to get out of their stuff. we want peace in the world, first we have to find it within ourselves. Easter thoughts. Focus on killing Jesus seems weird. Well, hopefully they're not focusing on killing Jesus, but they're focusing on the resurrection. You know, the whole thing about Christ's path was to show us the way. He said, what I can do, you can do and more. Okay? What I have done, you can do and more. He showed us the path by living example. This is a guru. Okay? This is a sadguru. He showed by living example. Yes, you go out in the wilderness and you'll have the temptations come up. And if you're following God, you're following the inner heart, you're following the inner path, it's not going to be easy. If you're speaking the truth, not everyone is going to love you. They didn't love him. Okay? He was giving mercy, went into the temple, and what happened? Was he sitting there whispering honeyed words? You're doing such a wonderful thing out here. No. He threw over the money changers' tables. He wrecked havoc. You've made my father's house a den of thieves. Were they happy? They weren't happy. He had followers that were after him many times just for the miracles. He says, look what I'm offering you, and what are you chasing me for? Loaves and fish. Transient. What I'm trying to give you is, you know, something eternal. I'm trying to tell you the kingdom of heaven is within. It's now. It's here. Quit looking for something far off. Go within. Find it now. Okay. Against love there is no law. Yet don't think I've come to do away with the law. I've come to fulfill it. In other words, karma's in place and it will remain in place. But if you're coming from love, there will be no karma. Why? You can't make karma when you're in love. When you're doing from the heart. Okay. And what did he do? His life wasn't easy. He tried to get away from the crowds sometimes. He had the internal thing. He knew what was coming. He knew the prophecies. He knew he's going to be strung up. Father, if you can, take away this cup, but not my will, your will be done. Surrender. Surrender. I'll surrender. Even if I have to go to the cross, even if I have to be, I'll surrender to that. Surrender. Was it easy? No. He's up on the cross, and what does he say? Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And then the words that nobody understood. Why have you forsaken me? Why have you forsaken me? In that moment before transition, before nirvikalpa, that's what you feel like. Absolute total extinction is coming. Or you feel like maybe you're going to be possessed or something. It's just absolute dread. Overwhelming. It's the last great barrier before realization. in anyone's path, many times this is what comes. In my own case, it was that way. In the midst of that, you still surrender. In that moment, I said it consciously, not my will, yours be done. On the altar of truth, I lay myself. If I'm possessed, I'm possessed. If I die, I die. It's in your hands. I no longer have control. Surrender 100% and let go. What's going to come is going to come. And then you find out it was illusion. That death, that fear was illusion of our own creation. That there was nothing to fear. That there's only that divine is. Another explanation for why he said that was, yeah, his attention was to taking the sin of this mankind. And a lot of time, you know, during one part of the journey also, you can feel that. At one part of the journey, I felt absolutely not only my own pain and sorrow, but the pain and sorrow of the world. It was crushing. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. It's praying for death. I can't. It's hard enough to feel your own, but to feel the crushing weight of humanity and their sorrow and their suffering. Maybe at that point, he said, let me take on the sins of the world. And that point, yes, you feel like you're separated. You feel the vast suffering of humanity. Okay. But you go beyond it and it's finished. It's over. It's done. So we go through that path of we have the temptations, we have the wilderness where we're wandering. We feel like we're out there alone. We feel the suffering of ourselves. And if we're on the mystic's path and the inner path, this is why it shows Christ with the heart, with the thorns around it. You feel the suffering of humanity, not only your own suffering, but the suffering of humanity. And it's oppressive, crushing. And at that point, we can pray for death. I literally prayed for death. And then you feel like the walking dead at that point. And when Christ died, what happened for 3 days? He was there, and where did it say he went? To the bowels. He went to hell, and he preached to those that were in hell and talked of liberation. And in personal journey, what we do at that point is we just praying for resurrection. You feel like a zombie. That's even worse than feeling the suffering of the world. And you're praying for resurrection. And we go forward. Because we know at that point we can't go backwards. And then we totally surrender. Sometimes it's kicking and screaming. So exhausted we can't do anything else. We know we've done everything that we can do through ego. We can't do anything else. We've tried everything we can do, every practice, everything we could do. And now we're at the point of exhaustion. Fear is rising up. Surrender. And afterwards, we laugh because it was the last great illusion that there could be any separation. Like the Bible says, it doesn't matter where I go, God, there you are. If I'm in the highest heavens, you're there. If you go into the deepest hell, still you're there. There is nowhere I can go where you are not. That's the reality. There's nothing that exists except for God. Nothing that exists except for that divine essence. The rest of it is shadow. What substance really does shadow have? Only that which our minds create and hold and sustain. But when you finally know, absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt, that only that divine essence is, the rest of it falls away. There is nothing other than this divine presence. This was Christ's message. Celebrate. You're liberated. Have no fear. Fear not. Fear not. What are you fearing? God is, and that's all it is. Fear not. So the thing is not to focus on Christ's death. For there is no death. And that's what the message was. There is no death. They saw him after the resurrection. What happened? Look at doubting Thomas. Here. Think I'm dead? Go for it. Stick your hand in there. Okay? And they say he went on and lived out his life. They have tombs and stuff in Kashmir, a tomb where Christ, they say, is laid, and the Muslims also guard it. So he resurrected, and he went forward, lived out the rest of his life, is what they say. Some say no. The diehard Christian would fight that tooth and nail, but there is a lot of documented evidence that yes, he lived his life out. And his tomb is in Kashmir. So Christ was a great Satguru. He walked the talk. Okay? He never set himself up as a religion. That happened later. Okay?
I have a question. Was he different than the rest of us in that even as a child, he appeared to be enlightened? Or is that just the stories of him?
Well, there's two things to say with that, too. He said also when he went back to his own hometown, he said a prophet is not honored in his own hometown. He was not able to do the miracles there. Why? Yes, Mary and Joseph's kid. Okay. We see him growing up. Okay, he's a kid. He's a normal kid. Same thing. Okay. I think he was, a regular, type of a human being. But there are the sages. There are some that come in fully enlightened. There are some, yeah. There is one, the Amachi. I think it's an Amachi. The one, she's from India. Came in fully enlightened.
Alive now?
Mm-hmm. I think she's still alive, if it's the one I'm thinking of. It's one, and she came in fully enlightened. And she had to pull on coverings to be able to function in the world. Yeah. But there are some that come in fully aware. But yeah, it's the same thing, you know. We all have the same divine essence. There is no difference. Whether you're aware of it when you come in or you're not, it doesn't matter. There's not more God here and less here. That's impossible. That's why there's not one place more holy than another. What makes it so is this tendency of mind, you know, the attachment that it is. So therefore, when you go there, you feel that it is. But no, in reality, God is equally everywhere. Okay? Every place is equally as holy. So if you open yourself up to that, to seeing every moment as sacred and divine, and wherever you are at is holy ground, see how your life changes. Okay? You can either see life as absolutely sacred or absolutely profane. And the mindset you put yourself in, see how it changes. Okay? Quantum. You're the creator of your reality to some degree. Okay? Why cling to confusion and suffering when you can go within and find that heaven can exist here, now? So, test Christ's message. Rather than holding on to it as a philosophy, like he says, go within. Be still. Be still and know that I am God. Be still. I am that I am. I am that I am. All are that singular divine essence. That's all that is. So what shadow can remain? What can stand against that? That's why it's called illusion. It can't. And on that note, I think we will conclude satsang on this Easter Sunday. Let's understand Christ and his message, and that all of us walk to some degree that same type of path on our inner search, but recognize the end of that is realization and freedom, liberation, and it's possible here and now. You don't have to wait for some heavenly realm. It's here. It's now. It's present. Namaste, and thank you for coming. We'll take a break, have some tea, and then have our meditation time.